Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first half results 2021 conference call and live webcast. I am Sandra, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to Mr. Holger Laubenthal, CEO of Cembra Money Bank. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. And good morning, everyone, and welcome to the half-year results conference call. I am here with my partners, Pascal Perita, our CFO, and Volker Gloe, our Chief Risk Officer. So look, before we get into the slides, I'd like to just set the scene briefly with a few messages to highlight and start with saying I'm truly thrilled to be here. It's a great business and a strong team. So first, as you know, we are, of course, still in a challenging environment. But in spite of this, I'm pleased to see the business has shown strong resilience, as evidenced in several factors and amongst others in the outstanding loss performance. Second, it's important to me we are establishing a renewed sense of urgency, really around two top priorities. One is personal loan assets and also a focus on cost. And I'm excited that we have implemented measures to reignite growth in the personal loan business through a dedicated task force. And for the balance of the year, we'll focus on accelerating recovery with continued strong cost focus. Lastly, we are conducting a strategic review, which I'm really looking forward to. We'll update on this later in the year, but already today we leverage this to drive focus. And as an example, we discontinued the SME activities in the current form. So now let's go to the results. We'll present those first, and then I'll share some personal impressions after 4.5 months here at Cembra and implications. And finally, we look forward to taking your questions. So from a financial perspective, we've had a robust year so far. We recorded net income of 78.7 million Swiss francs. Financing receivables declined by 1%, but we also have seen a rebound starting in May. Revenues were down 5%, net interest income down 6% year on year due to development in personal loans. Commissions declined by 3%, which really had to do with the extended lockdown, and Pascal will talk about this in more detail. Cost-to-income ratio came in at 52.6%, and to be candid here, while this is largely driven through temporarily lower revenues, and despite strict cost discipline, I want to be clear in my view that it's not an acceptable number, and it's far from my ambition as to where we should be as a business. So I want to reassure you that this has my and our full attention, and our aspiration remains in place as for the overall financial framework with regards to this number. We are confident to recover here as soon as revenues come back to normal. On losses, we're happy to confirm that we see no signs of any deterioration. Our underlying risk performance has been excellent again. Adjusted for a one-off loan sale, our operating loss performance came to 0.7%, and Volker will explain this in more detail. As a result, the annualized return on equity was 14.2%. This was achieved on a further improved capital base with Tier 1 capital at 18.3%. So overall, resilient business performance in the first half, seeing rebounding growth in revenues, and we confirm our outlook for the full year. Let me, on the next page, give you some more color on the different products and markets. So personal loans, we've already seen a decline in receivables last year, and this trend continued into this year. Consumer spending remains subdued due to the COVID-19-related restrictions, which has an impact on reduced loan volumes. We've also seen the competitive environment evolving steadily with seeing activity, including from some new and smaller players. In this context, however, there's also some good news. Part of the reduced top line is due to underwriting restrictions, which we put in place given the uncertain outlook on the environment, and that, again, has driven the strong excellent loss performance. That said, these results are clearly disappointing. We have put in place, that was one of my first priorities, a dedicated task force to get this business back on the growth track. And we're encouraged to see good momentum in the last few months. Coupled with gradual lifting of underwriting restrictions, this will drive performance improvements. The auto business is very stable. New and used car markets are still experiencing some challenges given global supply chain issues. But transactions are starting to increase again versus a very low 2020. And our market share here overall is stable. In cards, we're pleased to see a gradual return to a more healthy national spend level. Domestic volumes have had a strong rebound, and monthly card transaction volumes after 4 months were even slightly higher year on year. However, as you know, international card revenues continue to lag a bit as people only slowly return to pre-pandemic travel patterns. However, here as well, we've seen noticeable improvements in the last few months that are quite encouraging. Next page in terms of operational highlights. Look, let me just update you on the priorities for the year that we set out in February. And you'll notice we introduced one change, which is on the first one here, because I want to make sure we have a strong sense of urgency as a team as we accelerate through the late stage of the pandemic. I mentioned the personal loan task force to reignite growth. We have some early improvements. We reviewed and lifted a lot of the COVID-19 related underwriting restrictions. Volker can give more detail on this, and already mentioned continued focused cost discipline. Card business, we're pleased to have successfully launched the IKEA relationship. Excited about that, and that in despite of the COVID-19 restrictions for outlets and reduced footfall, but very pleased with having launched this, and our card innovation project is on track. I'm excited about our continued focus on ESG. We've had strong progress. We've had rating improvements. And we're looking at new ways of working as we cautiously bring the workforce back into the office and implement flexible working policy and trainings around this. In terms of the transition, that's completed, and I want to thank Robert and the team for helping me and us through this period. So with this, let me hand over to Pascal for the first half financials.
Thank you, Holger, and good morning, everyone. Let me start with reinforcing what Holger just said. Despite 4.5 months of economic restrictions on both domestic consumptions and international travels, we delivered a robust business performance for the first 6 months of the year, and our assets are picking up again since May. This is encouraging for the second half of the year. We are very pleased with our ex and loss performance, addressing decisively our assets drop in personal loan business and manage our costs diligently in the pandemic period, this despite though, the disappointing cost-to-income ratio. So let's dig deeper into the numbers on the P&L. Total net revenue declined by 5% to $235.9 million. The interest income declined by 6% as a consequence of lower assets in personal loans. Interest expense was 4% lower due to lower debt. Commission and fees income decreased by 3%, mainly due to lower card fees income as a result of economic restrictions. Cembra delivered very solid loss performance. The provisions for losses decreased by 15.8 million to 14.4 million due to one-off debt sale as well as excellent underlying loss performance. This debt sales has to be seen in the context of the Cashgate integrations and Volker, our chief risk officer, will further comment soon. The reported loss rate was 0.5 for the first 6 months, respectively 0.7, adjusted as of for this one-off. The total operating expense decreased by 1% to 124.1 million, mainly as a result of successful integrations of Cashgate in 2020, offset by higher expense for information technology and personal expense. I will further comment in one of my next page. Let's now talk about the net revenue by sources. As you can see on the left side of this page, the interest income declined by 6% from $203 million to $191 million as a consequence of lower personal loans asset, as mentioned before, and Holger already provided some insights behind the reductions of the net financing receivables. So in the personal loan, receivable declined by 4%, attributable to lower market demand and tightened underwriting in the context of COVID restrictions on the economy. As a consequence, interest income decreased by 12% with a yield of 7.1%. The net financing receivables in auto declined by 1% for the reported period, and the interest income was stable with yield stable as well. And in the credit card, the net financing receivable increased by 6% to $1 billion. Interest income in the card business was stable as well, with a yield of 8.2%. Let's now talk about the card's transactions volume and the revenues. The card volumes increased by 11% for the first 6 months compared to 2020, respectively as of 3%, plus 3% compared to 2019 or pre-COVID-19. We are, of course, pleased with our continued outperformance compared to the rest of the credit card market. As a reminder, last year in 2020, January and February month had strong volume before the COVID-19 pandemic started, with 2.5 months of economic lockdown followed by a strong rebound in June. This year, we actually had 4.5 months of economic lockdown, and the volumes since May are encouraging, as you can see on the chart on the top right side. This is largely driven by the lifting of travel restrictions and increasing international volumes. During the COVID period, we observed a sustainable shift to card payment and away from cash, resulting in an increase of domestic volume offset by lower international volumes compared to pre-COVID period. We saw significant differences in volume growth by merchant categories or industries, and I just wanted to give a few examples. Hotels, lodging, as we saw for the first 6 months compared to last year, plus 41%. Department stores, clothing, shoes, we saw an increase in volume, plus 16%. Grocery stores, plus 11%. On the opposite, we saw as an example the restaurants, bars, minus 8%. This is largely due to the economic restrictions in Switzerland. And airlines, travel agencies, car rentals was 24% due to minus 25% due to travel restrictions. However, in the month of June, airlines, travel and agencies increased strongly or very strongly as compared to June last year. Now let's talk about the card revenues on the bottom side. They decreased by 2%, with interest income flat and commissions and fees income decreasing. As you can see, the interest income very, very stable, driven by stable interest-bearing assets. The card commission and fees remain at lower level compared to pre-COVID time due to lower international volumes. However, since May, we have seen an increase in international volume due to the lifting of the travel restrictions driving an increase in commission and fees. Of course, there may still be a lag for the consumer confidence to come back to previous year spending patterns. We are confident with the recovery of the credit card revenue in a post-corona world. However, the biggest questions will remain the exact timing of it. Let's now move to the slides on the operating expense, please. Because the revenue were materially impacted by the economic restrictions, the cost income moved in the wrong directions during the period of the COVID-19 pandemic. However, on a run rate basis, we see a stable trend and we remain very cost cautious as we have demonstrated earlier. Our aspirations remain unchanged below 44%. The compensations and benefits cost increased by 4%. The increase is mainly due to salary inflations and accruals for variable compensations. Last year, we booked 80% of accruals in the situations of uncertainties around COVID-19, and this year, we booked the 100% accruals for variable compensations. General and administrative expense reduced by 4 million. And let's go now through the details of the G&A cost. Professional services reduced by 17%, mainly due to the one-off integration services in the previous reporting period. Marketing expense decreased by 41%, mainly due to non-recurring one-off expense in the first half of the year related to the launch of our Cembra business. Rental expense decreased by 25%. As a result of branch closure and branch consolidations in the context of Cashgate integrations. The 15% increase in information technology are related to digitization projects in the credit card business and other initiatives. The cost-income ratio was 52.6% compared to 50.3% in the previous reporting period. The increase was predominantly driven by decline in net revenues. Balance sheet. The group total net financing receivables at the end of the period amounted to 6.2 billion, a decline of 1% compared with year-end 2020. Consequently, our funding reduced by 1% as well. The shareholder equity decreased by 3% to 1,098 after Chambra payout the full 2020 dividend of 110 million in April this year. Let's give you a few comments on the net financing receivables and the rebound that we have seen since May. In personal loan, lower market demand and COVID-19 related underwriting rules resulted in low volume, which were partially offset by lower attritions. Under Olga's leadership, we launched this task force to decisively address the drop in personal loan, and it's good to see some stabilization since May. Auto business assets are holding nicely. We had lower new volumes for the first few months during the economic lockdown and also due to competitions in lower interest segments, but we were pleased with the productions since May. Cards plus 6% higher assets due to increased volume and gradual release of COVID-19 restrictions after February. Let's say a few words about the funding. The group funding portfolio remained stable at 5.8 billion, largely in line with lower asset base. Overall, the funding mixed with 57% deposit and 43% non-deposit is good. The period end funding cost amounted to 44 basis points. We have no issue in funding, it's balanced and diversified. We have a good funding pipeline and attractive offering on retail cash bonds since a lot of banks charge negative interest. The durations at 2.5 years reduce slightly as the wholesale portfolio rolls down steadily. The 2.5 durations is close to our asset durations on contractual basis. Now I would like to hand over to Volker. For the commentaries on the loss performance.
Yeah, thank you, Pascal, and good morning, everyone. For the first half of 2021, we report a loss provision of 14.4 million, which translates into a loss rate of 0.5%. Let me give you some more details on this number. First of all, there is the debt sale that already has been mentioned that we executed in the first half and that generated 8.2 million of additional recoveries. In the graph on the upper left, we normalized for this effect, but even if we detect this effect out and look into the underlying loss rate, it came in at 0.7%, which is still better than in previous periods. A few more words on this debt sale. As part of the Cashgate acquisition, there was a portfolio of loss certificates that was serviced by the former mother company of Cashgate. So in the context of the integration of Cashgate, we would have needed to migrate this portfolio into our systems, which obviously would have led to additional operational effort and consequent complexity. We assess this as not being particularly sensible, as we are talking about a portfolio that is already written off and that came in the form of loss certificates, so a form that is easily transferable on the market to a third party. So we checked on the market our options, basically, and checked for prices, and received an offer to sell the portfolio of loss certificates that met our expectations, and consequently, we executed the sale. I want to highlight that debt sales are actually a normal part of our collection strategies, and it's not the first time that we did that. You might remember that the last one we did in 2018, mainly on the credit cards portfolio, also in the form of loss certificates, because also at that time we wanted to avoid additional kind of operational inefficiencies. So it's exactly the same rationale as this time with the sale in H1. I want to highlight that also the underlying loss performance with a rate of 0.7% has been good, and a couple of drivers should be mentioned here. We generally observe a strong and diligent payment behavior of our customers. It probably also is supported by governmental measures to address potential negative impact by the COVID pandemic on the economy, but it might be also as simple as that possibilities to actually spend money have been restricted during the lockdown. Another factor is certainly in the measures that we implemented in the beginning of the COVID pandemic. In the context of strengthening our loss mitigation strategies, we tightened the underwriting rules, specifically in the personal loan book. We touched upon this topic when we saw the asset development, and yes, it certainly has an impact on volumes, but it also avoided any potential negative sensitivity on the loss line. Consequently, it now contributes to the loss performance in H1. The restrictions were cautiously but consciously removed now and lifted in the first half, so that we maintain the long-term consistency in our credit risk appetite. Though we now might be in a late stage of the pandemic, there are still residual risks related to that, such as, for instance, second-round effects on the macroeconomy. Consequently, we aim to maintain our prudence in risk management, which is also evidenced by the level of allowances for losses. During the first half, we increased ALLL balances by about 5 million to now 89 million, and it still includes the environmental reserve of currently 2.1 million on the personal loan book that we put in place in the beginning of the pandemic to be prepared for any potentially unforeseen negative impacts on unemployment levels. When it comes to the asset quality and metrics related to that, we see that in line with loss performance, a continuously robust quality with 30-plus delinquencies at 1.8% and NPL at 0.7%. As we now in the first half of the year reverted back underwriting rules to pre-COVID levels, we would consequently also expect that the loss performance for now the second half to gradually move back to levels that are more in line with prior years. And with that, I hand it back to Pascal to talk about the capital position.
Thank you, Volker. We have a strong capital position. Cembra remain very well capitalized with a strong Tier 1 capital ratio of 18.3%, respectively a core equity ratio of 15.6%. In April, S&P reaffirmed though the A- rating and revised the outlook from negative to stable due to the steady financial performance of our company. Thank you for listening, and now I would like to hand over to Holger for his observations and outlook.
Excellent. Thanks, Pascal. So look, I'd like to share a few personal observations here and thoughts that I've had since starting at Cembra, so you get a bit of sense for who's sitting at the other end of the line here. So look, firstly, we have incredibly strong substance in this business. You know, we spoke about the loss performance as an example. And there's great depth across the functions. You know, the average tenure of our risk underwriters is over 15 years. Our auto sales force has almost 2 decades on average. And I could go on, and the expertise this brings is really the backbone of this business. Secondly, you may know I worked in this business between 2003 and 2006, and it's just great to see some former colleagues again and then meet all the new colleagues. And I want to just share a brief story. You know, the likes of many I've encountered many when I started here. One of my first days here, a colleague of mine I met in the hallway, and she had the same broad smile that she had 15 years ago when I was here. And I asked her what has kept her here all the time since then. And look, her answer was simple: we have great people, and this is where I belong. And I hear these things over and over. You know, everybody wants to win. There's passion. We care for each other, and there's good commitment to deliver. I'm also very pleased in terms of the board and management board dynamics. We have a supportive board of directors, and I'm pleased to see robust dialogue, discussion on topics that matter, and gives me good confidence in terms of collaboration going forward. You know, we really understand this business and the market and consumer finance. You know, I've spoken with customers and partners, and they all tell me they like us because we solve problems. We're available. We understand how they operate, and we understand how we can best serve them, and we're responsive to their needs. And we have been doing this for decades. You know, the business model is a well-oiled machine. We know the businesses. They operate well, and this really has allowed to develop this track record of profitable growth and resilience. And we continue to deliver attractive ROEs on the back of a solid capital position. We're committed to the dividend. Sustainability, close to my heart. I'm really glad this is getting more attention across the board, and for us as well, as we're building deep roots in the bank and in the culture and listen regularly to all stakeholders involved. Finally, on a personal side, again, you know, feels a bit like coming home. You know, it's good memories from the early 2000s, and so I'm excited about the journey ahead. So on the next page, kind of what does that imply in our focus areas going forward? I already mentioned briefly we're conducting a strategic review of the business, and I'm actually really excited to craft our vision and strategy together with the team here. So let me just give you a view of the trends in the market as I see them and the implications for us. The first point is, you know, the fundamentals in this market remain attractive in terms of consumer credit needs. And for all the reasons that I've just explained, we have a strong position to capitalize on this. That said, there are also some changes. You know, look, I've had the opportunity to run consumer finance businesses, banks, retailers, technology business in B2B and B2C across the world. And you know, it's no surprise that as anywhere, you know, digitization, data analytics, technology, fragmentation of value chains, you know, all come to play in Switzerland as well. And, you know, consumer finance operating models and ways to create and deliver values to customers are evolving and changing. And so as one result, you know, a leadership position in technology is a critical ingredient to sustainable success in this space. Lastly, and we've alluded to this as well, you know, yield pressure is here, and if anything, it's intensifying. It's not going to go away. And I think the way to succeed in this market and continue to succeed is to make sure you put the customer first and to ensure efficiency and business model scalability. So what does that mean for us as we conduct the strategic review? One, you know, I think it's really important for us to clearly define our ambition as a playmaker in this market. You know, we are a leader in the markets we operate in, and we need to actively build our future. Today, we're serving over a million customers, which I think is fantastic, and the feedback is really positive. That said, I think it's important for us to look at how we even better leverage our customer understanding to build real intimacy going forward, not just today, not just what we've learned in the past, but really what we see happening in the next two, three, five, and more years, and how consumers and partners will need our services, how they'll consume them, where we find them, and ensure that we build simple and intuitive solutions around that. We spoke about the cost-income challenge before, and look, one way to address this, of course, is simplifying our operating model and technology landscape and ensuring alignment, a simple model, which is both efficient and scalable and delivers for our customers. And finally, and it's obvious, but it's really important and something that matters deeply to me, is our culture, right? And making sure the culture and the capabilities evolve to keep track with all these challenges that I just explained. And so we're looking at how to strengthen the skills it takes and the ways we work together to make all this happen. Now, all of this is in the context of who we are in our DNA. And at the core, that's a Swiss consumer lender, deep expertise in functions such as risk management, collections, and many others. So this is what's going into our review. I'm quite excited about it, and we'll look forward to updating you on this in December with more details to follow. So then just before we wrap here and get ready for questions, a few words on the outlook for the second half. As our focus will be on accelerating the recovery and continued strong focus on cost discipline. In terms of the outlook, you know, we're currently anticipating a stable economic and regulatory environment pending the evolution of the pandemic. But we do expect a rebound in cards fee income in the second half following the forecast economic recovery and the gradual continued easing of travel restrictions and continued strong loss performance. Beyond that, we reaffirm our medium-term targets. So now we look forward to answering your questions.